Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia.
So we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world.
Yeah, we multiplied. We needed more. The rich got rich and the poor got poor. This is Harvey Wasserman back for another hour of the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show here at the Progressive Radio Network based in fabulous New York City. We got a full hour today. We're going to do on veganism. I listened to the last show, The Lone Vegan, so we're going to segue into that. We have actually with us today a veteran of the Gulf War, Desert Storm. Amazing. I think she's the first Gulf War veteran I've had on the show. Araya Flynn is going to talk to us about veganism. I do want to start a little bit, though. I never, ever, ever discuss the Middle East, but this situation in Israel is and Gaza is horrifying. At some point, somebody is just going to have to pull the plug on the violence there. That's all I got to say. I don't know how it's going to happen. I don't take sides. It's just insane. And it's going to have to end before the world ends. That's pretty much what I got to say about the Middle East. I never, ever get involved. Probably I'll get more phone calls on that than I've gotten on my hours and hours of shows on nuclear power. But it's very frightening, very sad. Hundreds of people being killed and just no reason for it. So sooner or later, our species is going to have to figure out how to get rid of war. And we'll have to do it. And then we can move ahead to Solartopia, as it were. Now, part of the trick, part of the key, part of the transportation system for getting to Solartopia is to change our diet, change our agriculture, change the way we eat, change the way we grow the food. And in particular, our attitudes towards meat and our consumption of meat is at the core of a lot of our earthly ills. And I have to, by way of, shall we say, disclosure, I have been a vegan on everything except fish since 1971. I stopped eating meat. I was living on a hippie farm, communal farm in western Massachusetts, and we had some cows, and I got pretty friendly with one. And it came time for him to be turned into hamburger, and I strongly objected. And my communards, my fellow communards, said basically, correctly, that if I wasn't going to participate in the slaughter of this animal, then I should not eat the meat. And I said, okay, that's fair, and I did not. And I have not had meat by choice since 1970. I have along the way had some soup base that was probably made with beef and without knowing it. And whenever that has happened to me and continues, it doesn't happen very often, actually. I don't eat out very much. If I ate some consomme or soup that was made with a beef base, and it didn't even have any meat in it, just made with beef base, my stomach would go absolutely crazy. If I ate a single bite of steak, I would probably have to go to the hospital. I'm just completely intolerant of it. And the same is true of dairy. I have over the years desperately wanted to eat pizza. And every time I eat pizza, my system goes completely nuts. I get stopped up. I'm out of it for hours. I have, however, had a very, very, well, I have to say impossible time stopping eating fish, even after Fukushima. I have found myself eating fish, and especially salmon, And just one of those things I've been unable to stop. So, but when I first stopped eating meat, I did some research. I read an amazing book called Diet for a Small Planet by Francis Moore LePay. And many of the arguments against eating meat made certain ecological and political sense to me. Now, I have heard our guest speak, and she is really powerful, extremely passionate, and very, very well informed. She's about as hardcore a vegan activist as I have ever met. She is also, she has emailed me her resume, and she is also, much to my amazement, a decorated U.S. Air Force Desert Storm veteran and a 20-year career in project operations management and logistics, telecom, legal law enforcement, healthcare, and renewable energy development. Her name is Araya Flynn. Araya, are you there?
I'm Harvey.
Yes, you're there. Could you have a more Irish name?
I suppose it could be, but it is unique.
could you have more flaming red hair than you do?
Well, I suppose with today's stuff, anything's possible. You know,
I don't know, man. I don't think your hair can be more flaming red than it is. Of course, our listeners can understand now that you and I know each other for a long time. I have heard you speak many, many times, which is why I've invited you onto this show.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here.
You're born and raised in California, but you live in Ohio. And you've worked with the Sierra Club, the Ohio Environmental Council, 350, PETA, Mercy for Animals. What is HSUS?
Oh, I'm sorry. The Humane Society of the United States.
Okay. All right. So let's start at the beginning here.
Okay.
You, like 99.9% of all Americans, although the percentage who have never eaten meat is probably growing, given the nature of the spread of veganism. But
yeah,
like all Americans, especially as a veteran of the military, you must have, at some point in your life, been a meat eater.
Oh,
so
yes.
Tell us why you ceased eating meat.
Okay. Well, you know, I kind of want to start a little bit. I want to ask or answer a couple of questions that you raised right off the get-go here. I mean, my vegan development took time, but, you know, I'd always considered myself an environmentalist. Being born and raised in California, it was very much on the radar there to be concerned, you know, with our heavy population in Southern California. It was a very progressive community of awareness surrounding everything with sustainable living. So, you know, I was raised to be an animal lover by my mom, and so I was always rescuing animals. Didn't matter where they were. I was the girl who, you know, picked the skunk up out of the freeway who had been hit by a car, you know, the night before prom. It didn't
matter.
Wait a minute.
You picked up a skunk out of the highway that had been
Correct.
Hit by a car? You picked
Yes.
up a skunk?
Yes. Life is a life. You know, I've always, you know, made the connection at least towards the specific animal I encountered that they were of value.
What happened with this skunk? Did it survive?
No, unfortunately, it did not. But we did take it home.
Did you get to go to the prom?
Oh, yeah. I went to the prom. I didn't get sprayed. I just, you know, but that was the kind of commitment I had even then, you know, when I was very young, that I cared about animals more than perhaps my prom. if it came down to it, you know, if I was going to get sprayed or not, it didn't matter. But
all right, so at what age did you stop eating meat?
I didn't stop eating meat. I didn't make that connection until I was in my late 20s. It was an incremental thing for me, but you know, some things that I want to clarify right up front that I think are critical is that a vegan is not someone who just does not eat meat. What drives vegan behavior is an ethical recognition that other earthlings have value. And it's that is the foundation that drives vegan behavior. So it goes well beyond meat. it goes, it looks at animal exploitation on all levels. So,
I think there are
animals
plenty of
for any
who,
purpose.
Who,
so
I,
it does,
I'm going to let
it,
you finish. Go ahead.
It goes well beyond meat. It covers every animal product that we consume as consumers, not just what we eat, but what we use in products and other things like entertainment. You know, there's a fabulous movie out there called Earthlings that can really drill down on the five ways we use animals in society. So, you know, we use them not only just for food. We use them for clothing. We use them for entertainment, like in circuses and zoos and rodeos, and things like that, you know, water parks. We use them for medical experimentation. And we also use them for, food, clothing, experimentation, entertainment, and pets.
Sports mascots.
We
use them for sports mascots.
Yeah, we use a lot of things for sports mascots that we probably ought not. That could be a whole nother discussion. But, we use them in everything. They're the foundation of our entire culture. So being vegan can sometimes seem like an overwhelming task to many people, but that's what I'm here to change. So, but it also greatly impacts the war that you discovered, because what we are recognizing as vegans is that all individuals, all earthlings, human and non-human, have value. And that is the precept, you know, of the foundation of the vegan ethic. So when we're looking at how to live, vegan values are the foundation that will bring world peace, which is why it is the root cause of what I deal with and why it's the one cause that I've chosen to champion above all else.
Well, when you went into Desert Storm, were you a vegan?
No. Did not even know the word existed.
You were involved. Did you carry a weapon?
No, I was not infantry. I was in the Air Force, so compared to, you know, someone in the Marines or the Army, you know, I lived a pretty sheltered existence in the war.
What did you do?
I was stationed in the European theater, so I wasn't actually on the ground in Iraq or any of the Middle East. I never set foot down there. I was actually in logistics, working to support the war from Germany. So my involvement was more things like cleaning the weapons when they came back. I was low ranking, so I got tasked with a lot of details. I built all the mobility bags that went over there for all their safety and protective equipment, for like their chemical warfare bags, their medical bags, you know, the different things. So it was very similar to packing someone's parachute. You know, when you go off into a combat zone and you don't have where they know they're using chemical warfare, it's crucial that they have everything they need in their chemical warfare bags. So, as a logistician, you know, I was in charge of basically the storage, distribution, and procurement of all the assets that people in the military use. And so, you know, my details involved anything to do with supporting the war from a logistical standpoint. But no, I was not a weapons carrying member. I did have to know how to fire an M16 and did well at it. I was 2 points short of expert marksman when I fired my M16, qualifications. But it wasn't something I needed to do daily, and I'm quite thankful for that, actually.
Well, what do you think now that you're a vegan, and we'll get into more of that in a minute, but not to lose this train of thought here, what do you now think of your military service?
Well, I wish I would have been a little more informed about what I was really involved in when I did it. I was, you know, more caught up in the romance of the serving something greater than self, serving my country, protecting our freedoms, the usual mantra that they use for recruiting folks into the military. I came by it, honestly, by my best friend's father, who is the closest thing I had to a father as an influence in my life. He was the local Air Force recruiter. and I was living in a small town in Northern California, and there weren't a whole lot of options for me. And
well, you could have raised marijuana.
Well, you know, I wasn't into all that, so it wasn't really on my radar back then. You know, I was young, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for him. He was a wonderful influence in my life, and it was good for him, so I thought it would be good for me too. And you know, I had a patriotic bone in my body, and I had a lot of interest in everything it had to offer. In addition to, you know, being part of the greater good and serving my country, you know, there were other exciting possibilities like world travel and
right, and a free college education. So
yeah.
When you came, what exactly? I assume when you were in Germany in the military, you ate a lot of bratwurst and all that stuff. So what, when you came back from Desert Storm, where and when and why did you become a vegan?
Yeah, it's kind of a funny story, actually. I was in Europe. Techno was really big in the early 90s. So,
techno music, which is a contradiction in terms,
music,
as
trance,
far as I'm concerned.
Electronica stuff, yeah. And I discovered a musician called Moby while I was over there. Absolutely loved it. And once I got stateside, he had come out with a new album recently called Everything Is Wrong. And I saw that in the BX and just snatched it up. BX is short for Base Exchange, which is where a lot of like grocery shopping and departmental shopping kind of things are done. You get a good discount and so forth. But anyway, I picked up that disc, Everything Is Wrong by Moby, and in it, as I was listening to it, he had some essays. I'll never forget, one was called Some Facts That I'd Collected, and in it he listed so many things that were important to me. That it recalibrated me back to remembering, you know, all the sustainability and environmental things that I stood for as a youth, you know, in California growing up. And he talked about, you know, something, the one that comes to mind is that 500 new landfills are built every year in the United States. And just some really profoundly, you know, jaw-dropping, eye-popping facts that you know, just kind of takes you away from the materialism and the misguided priorities of our culture and kind of reels you back into reality.
So what this Moby techno disc, how did it convert you over, or how did it play a role in your becoming a vegan?
Well, the other essay that he wrote in there was called Animal Rights. And that was the first time I'd ever heard a serious case made for animal rights. And I'd never even really considered it. I mean, I knew I was an animal lover, but I did not ever hear the term even animal rights. I'd lived a fairly sheltered life, I think, in some way, somehow, you know, just being an animal lover. I wasn't really supporting any groups or animal rights organizations or anything yet. So, you know, I read that essay, and he made a really profoundly compelling case on why animals deserve rights. And I just remember sitting there, like, really pondering that and thinking, wow, how have I never even thought about this? And the most ironic thing was I had just moved back, you know, stateside, and this is early 90s, we're talking 93, 94, and I still had a landline back then. This is before cell phones and the internet and everything. So I got a solicitation, a phone call, and I answered the phone, and they were like, "You've won," and I was like, "Really?" You know what? They said, "This is Publishers Clearinghouse," and I'm like, "Is Ed McMahon at my door with the famous $1 million check? What's going on?" You know, and they said, "No, but you've won 4 free subscriptions." And I said, "Oh, okay. Well, what are my options?" And they said, "Well, you know, there's 200 to choose from." And they start listing them off. And one of the first magazines they read off was something called The Animal's Agenda. And I was like, whoa, what's that? And he said, it says here, it's the premier animal rights magazine. And I was like, no way, send me that. You know what I mean? I couldn't believe it. I just read this essay from Moby, and now I'm getting a solicitation, a free magazine for the Animals Agenda. So that comes in the mail, and, you know, it's no longer being published, which is really sad because it was a very well-done publication. But, oh, no. Are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. For a second,
yeah, go ahead.
I lost
your
cell phone. All right. So, it was, I mean, just a fantastic publication that
okay,
really
so
covered a lot
say,
of information.
What did it say specifically? What was the specific key that turned you to veganism? You know, we have a lot of listeners, and they're many of them may be vegans, but many of them will also be considering veganism. So what
right.
is it precisely that turned you to veganism?
Well, you know, like I said, it's really hard to specify the one single thing. It's like it's an energy, a force, you know, a consciousness that starts to take hold once you get caught up in this kind of awareness, you know, as you start to seek out and it seems like the forces of the universe are putting these things in my path that I digest and then, you know, respond to.
Okay,
you know,
so you're a believer
forward.
In animal rights, and then this energy comes forward. And did you overnight stop eating all meat?
No. What the Animals Agenda did for me that first day I opened it up was they had done a story on the factory farming of pigs, and that story was by Lisa Moriarty. She was a contributing writer to the Animals Agenda at the time, or maybe it was Laura Moriarty. Anyway, I apologize for messing up her name. But anyway, the story was so horrifying. As I was reading it, I was immediately transported into what it's like to be a farm worker in a factory farming establishment, I screamed a scream. I am certain that my neighbors thought I was being murdered somewhere in my house. You know,
while you were reading this article about
yes.
factory farming of pigs, you screamed.
Yes, I mean, I can't remember ever screaming a more soul eviscerating scream in my life. I mean, I just the gravity of what I was reading about what I'd never wanted to know about.
And at the time, you were still eating pork, I assume.
Oh yeah, I was completely
right, so,
oblivious.
I'm sure many of our listeners, our listeners, know about the horrifying conditions in these concentrated animal feeding operations, and
yeah.
pigs are among the worst. I mean,
we
do have is, and you know, I've been following this too, is that these pigs are raised in these horribly concentrated areas, and among other things, the whole lagoons are created of their waste, and these lagoons do break and go into streams, especially in North Carolina. There have been a few,
create
horrible pollution, and they are actually compromised the Chesapeake Bay in a very significant way. My friend Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has been working on this for a long time.
Yeah, it's a real problem on many levels, and for me, that was like the beginning of my gestalt shift. I mean, I just, you know, reading that article was just so powerful for me. It really did have an instant transformation on stopping the consumption of you know, my beloved bacon and ham chowder and pork chops and everything else I used to love. You know, I was so revolted.
And you stopped based on the cruelty to the animals?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, so this was not like a diet thing. This was not like, oh, I don't want to eat this unhealthy stuff anymore.
Right.
This was about
this,
you not wanting pigs to be subjected to this kind of torture. Is that correct?
It was about finally coming to the realization that I was complicit in something that was an absolute violation of every value I ever held dear.
Well, that's a strong statement, and I assume that some of the people listening will find that very interesting. I'm sure many, and you're welcome to call, by the way, 888-744-888, 888-744-888. I'm particularly interested in Araya. We're talking with Araya Flynn, a vegan activist here, a member of a group called Vegan Shift, a California native who lives in central Ohio. And I've known Araya for a long time. I've seen her speak. She has this wild flaming red hair and just goes completely, kind of like a rock star up there on the platform, when you speak. So, you got a little bit of the Bonnie Raitt in you and a little bit of Axl Rose. That's a combination, right? So, you became a vegan. I mean, everybody has their story, right? I became a vegetarian because I didn't want to kill cows, but I don't feel the same way about fish. And in the meantime, I gave up dairy, not particularly for, humanitarian reasons, but because I think dairy actually, in terms of health, is worse than meat in many ways.
Yes,
because
it is.
It's concentrated. It's nothing basically but fat and salt. I mean,
a bunch of other nasties.
You get some fiber. We're going to break around 3 minutes, but Araya, what have you done? And we're going to devote the whole second half hour to the substance of your arguments. I wanted to get the roots and where you came from with this. So when you stopped eating pork, based on your readings of the nature of the concentrated animal feeding operations, did you give up all other kinds of meat at the same time?
I did not. It was a process. And, you know, I was the only person that I knew who was going through this process. As I said, this was pre-internet, pre-cell phones, pre-a lot of things that have connected us in ways that we now have. What was amazing about, and I'm thankful, I'm thankful, although at the time it seemed kind of like it wasn't the greatest thing, was that the Animals Agenda also shared my name and address with every animal rights and animal welfareist organization known to man. And I could no longer go to my mailbox without some new atrocity arriving on a daily basis. So suddenly I was being solicited to by everyone. I was learning about bear baiting, Premarin mares, using orangutans as sex slaves. I mean, you name the atrocity towards animal, there's an organization out there championing it.
And you give to all of them, and that's a good thing, I think.
I did. I was donating to 33 different charities at one point, and, you know, I was a member, card-carrying member of PETA, and they introduced me to several Lamar things that also, you know, greatly accelerated my adoption of my own vegan shift.
All right, so what we're going to do when we come back, we're going to take a short break here. And what we do when we come back with Araya Flynn, vegan activist and longtime vegan herself, and a veteran of Operation Desert Storm, is we are going to talk to you, and you're going to tell us all the reasons spanning health, environment, and politics for veganism. I think you've made a pretty good case for the moral issue here. And so let's go into why, for health reasons, why for political reasons, and why for ecological reasons you think veganism is the way to go. We're at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show with Araya Flynn. We'll be back in about 3 minutes after this short break with Solartopia, the Rocky Top version, for my buddy, Cows with Guns hero, Dana Lyons.
Awesome.
New plants, oil refineries, pipelines, mega dams. Iran, Iraq, Russia, Nigeria, Venezuela, Kurdistan. Oil spill, meltdown, suburbia, mudslide, traffic jam. Road rage, asthma, famine, leukemia, it's time to get a better plan. Solartopia is home sweet home to me.
Solartopia with Dana Lyons, the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. I'm Harvey Wasserman. And that Dana Lyons, I've been saying on this show that Dana Lyons' Cows with Guns videos have had over 2 million views. And it's actually over 4 million. One of them has had 2.5 million. The two different Cows with Guns videos out there that I know of, one of them is kind of a claymation thing, and the other one is a drawn cartoon animation. I think the cartoon animation has about 2.5 million views, and the claymation one I think has 1.5 million. Of course, it begs the question: can you be a vegetarian and watch Cows with Guns and still be a pacifist? Are we advocating Uriah Flynn that cows pick up arms and overthrow the state? Well, I don't know about that. Anyway, we're back with Uriah Flynn. Uriah is a flaming red-haired, incredibly articulate and powerful advocate of veganism. We've spent the first half of the show discussing her service in Operation Desert Storm and her conversion to veganism. What I'd like to do now, Uriah, and I've heard you speak with great authority on this, is to tell us the health and the ecological impacts of veganism and conversely of meat eating, and why we would want for our personal health to get away from eating meat, and why veganism is good for us. So if you could jump in on that, that'd be great.
Okay, yeah, certainly.
So why don't you start with personal health, and then we'll get to the health of the planet. So tell us, I've seen you're a healthy-looking specimen, and tell us what do you think veganism has done for your health, and why eating meat is bad for our health.
Okay. I'm glad you kind of touched on that, because there's definitely the micro and the macro levels of health that should be considered and weighed in this all day. Every time, you know, too often people want to isolate it and make it some kind of personal choice. And they're not really looking at the, not just their, beyond their own individual health, but the health of the society, you know, as impacted, or the health of the workers and the industries that support animal exploitation, or the health of the climate and the planet, as the, you know, as you kind of spoke about with just like having a factory farm cesspool overflow into the bay, you know, the Chesapeake Bay. There's extremely negative impacts to humanity and the local ecology and all the animals and other living life, you know, individuals, besides the obvious health and violation towards the individuals and directly impacted being the animal, right? So there's several considerations that need to go into this, but if you want to just talk about human individual health, then absolutely a whole foods plant-based diet can be the most healthiest diet that a human can pursue.
Well, let's start it, Uriah. I'm sure many people listening in eat meat. So
sure,
tell
sure.
us, and I eat fish. So, but not meat for, you know, since 1970.
Well,
but
for me,
tell us why eating meat is harmful to our health.
it's harmful to your health for a number of reasons, and especially as time has changed. For starters, you know, as I was mentioning, physiologically and anatomically, we are not, we don't have the characteristics that support a meat-based diet, okay, or an animal-based diet. When you look at our everything from our jaws, our teeth, our digestive system, the digestive enzymes, the, you know, the our physiology, our fingernails, I mean everything, you know, our vision, our speed. You know, we have these hands with the dexterity and no claws. You know, we have these grinding, masticating jaws and flattened teeth. You know, all of this, the digestive enzymes speak for digesting carbohydrates. Our brain runs on sugar and glucose. So, you know, those are not, while protein is very important and it's abundant in the plant kingdom, you know, eating the animal products, anything from an animal, it comes with a lot of different things. You know, any natural carnivore or omnivore doesn't have a limit to which, you know, they should only eat a certain amount of meat before it starts causing major health problems. Furthermore, you know, you look at the contaminants that you get in today's modern industrialized methods of producing over 10 billion animals, you know, to feed our 440 million Americans. You know, if you want to look at the global impact, it's trillions of individuals are going, you know, to slaughter between, you know, the fish and the land animals. So if you're looking at aquatic life and land life, or then you know, your numbers skyrocket into the trillions.
Araya, in terms of human physiology, are you saying, I mean, this would come to a surprise, as a surprise to many people. Are you saying that in terms of evolution, in terms of our essential organic nature, that human beings were not designed to eat meat? I think a lot of people would be very surprised to hear that.
I know they would, because we've been told we were omnivores for a long time, and behaviorally, we are. We have been, absolutely. Won't debate that, you know. However, just because we've done something a certain way for a long period doesn't mean we needed to. We just needed to for different reasons, not for biological reasons. It wasn't a mandate for the development of our brain. But there's a lot of information that's come out about that, and continues to, you know. But it's not a fact that the human brain developed because we introduced eating meat. We did not evolve from apes because we ate meat. There's a lot of, you know, misinformation and a lot of mythology out there that people like to, you know, to continue, like the, you know, the protein combining myth that's been around, and that was debunked in like 1990 something by Francis Moore LePay, the same person who wrote that book, you know. So
you're saying basically that it's an aberration, that it's not a biologically natural thing for human beings to eat meat?
No, not necessarily. We do it. It's socially acceptable, you know. They've had vegans, essentially. They didn't call it vegan, but they valued an ethic called ahimsa, which means nonviolence to all living beings. And, you know, they're the most extreme ascetic culture in the world to observing that standard of nonviolence towards all, you know, and they've been around over 6,000 years. They're unfortunately a dying religion, if you will, because they aren't a proselytizing religion, and they are in a modern world where things are changing, but no, you know, humans can thrive biologically without consuming any animal products whatsoever. And I mean, if you want to talk about protein, you can look at your nearest gorilla, elephant, you know, rhinoceros. The largest mammals on the planet are herbivorous. So, you know, in most cases, I mean, I think the whales are even, they're a plankton eater, you know. So you start looking at that, they aren't suffering from protein deficiency. That's a marketing problem that we have
in
this country.
All right, so you've mentioned this protein thing a number of times.
Yeah.
So tell us the dynamic that's involved with protein and veganism, and why it's such an important issue to you.
Well, because we have a culture that has been programmed by the marketing industry of, you know, the USDA. So we don't have...
Of the what? The what?
The United States, the USDA.
Oh, the United States Department of Agriculture.
Department of Agriculture, yeah. So, you know, you're looking at them kind of foisting their priorities on the American public. And they are, you know, the American Dairymen's Association, all these different organizations have these very, very authoritative sounding titles, and they're influencing our schools. They provide the educational materials that are used in their marketing materials. They're not the authority on human nutrition. Although, you know, it's a huge conflict of interest to have the Department of Agriculture managing the nutrition programs, which is the case in every university across the country. If human nutrition is a health issue, then why isn't it managed by the Department of Human Health Sciences? That's where it belongs. But no, it's currently categorized under the Department of Agriculture.
So what is this myth about protein? We're all taught that we need to have protein of some
kind. Right.
And that,
well,
that translates for most
necessary.
People into eating.
Yeah, protein is absolutely necessary, and it's in every plant. Every whole food has protein in it. You're only talking about, you know, food that has been processed and isolated that has no protein in it. So, you know, if you're looking at oils, if you're looking at sugars, you know, things that have been refined down and isolated, processed foods may not have any protein in them. But all foods, all plant products have protein, and you need very little. You know, the average person gets well over 200% of their daily requirements for protein, and it's causing significant health. I mean, we do not have a protein deficiency in this nation anywhere. No one does. You know, they might have anemia, they might have all kinds of other things, but this is a very complicated mix of reasons behind all of that. And so, you know, one of the biggest myths we have to bust is that protein comes from animals. It comes from plants, it comes from animals. Animals don't have fiber. Humans need fiber. We have these very long, complicated digestive systems, and when you just eat animal products like cheese, you get blocked up, you don't move it, and it rots in your gut, and there's, you know, all kinds of health problems that people don't even realize associated with all the animal products they consume and processed foods. Those are two very bad things that we've done to ourselves over, you know, since the post-industrialized war. You know, World War II was the actual shift in how we started producing food in this nation, and we moved away from an agrarian society where people were growing predominantly their own food. You know, over 50% of the nation farmed in the 1950s, and today less than 1% of the nation farms. That's a real problem that's left us in a very perilous position. So,
why is that? Why is it dangerous for us to
self-sufficiency is really important
to
surviving any kind of cataclysmic event. You know, once the system breaks down, if we run out of oil and energy, like a lot of different places, I mean, you can look at there's places. There was a documentary done on Cuba, you know? They're riding around on bicycles now because they had an oil crisis, you know? There's a lot of things that happen in societies, and if you're not prepared to, you know, I think a transition town should be a plan in every single city's planning and legislative, you know, policymakers' handbook. They need to be moving on that and fast, especially if we really have this major crisis in energy that everybody's been predicting for quite some time. I mean, we've already reached peak oil, so you know.
Well, Ryan Flynn, what statistical or documentary evidence do you have that a vegan diet is healthier than a non-vegan diet?
Oh, okay. Well, there's a lot of really fantastic documentaries that have come out of late. Forks Over Knives came out, I think, in 2010. And that one's really great at looking at, you know, the leading causes of death in America are generally heart disease, stroke, cardiovascular diseases, basically cancer, diabetes, you know, all of these things. There's a fantastic video done by Dr. Michael Greger. You can YouTube it. It's called Uprooting the Leading Causes of Death, where he talks about the top 15 of the top 16 leading causes of death in the United States. and how they can be either prevented, reversed, or arrested using a plant-based diet. So, I mean, it has a remarkable, you know, I could tell you my own personal story.
All right, let's hear that. What is your own personal story?
Well, as
what,
you know, for
what,
the first
what,
20,
how has veganism helped
years,
your health?
The first 20-something years of my life, I was a, you know, typical American eating a standard American diet. I wasn't real big on the fast food or processed food front, but I did have the occasional Burger King or Kentucky Fried Chicken or whatever nastiness. Thank God I got rid of that problem. But for the 27 years or so that I had been consuming food like that and cheese pizza and all those other, you know, ice cream, cheesecake, those things, I had developed a 30 to 50% blockage in my right carotid artery that I was completely unaware of. I also had ovarian cysts. I had acne. I had chronic constipation, all kinds of, you know, poor health problems that everybody just thinks are normal in today's society. And normally people just take over-the-counter medicines for them or get procedures and have their, you know, the bypass surgery. You know, my grandmother had a triple bypass surgery on her heart. You know, there's cancer. There's all things that people had in my family history that I essentially warded off by changing the way I ate. And I eliminated all of those problems. I don't have any of what I've mentioned now. And,
do you have
I haven't had to take any kind of over-the-counter medicine or anything.
Do you have other people who become vegan that you can talk about who've had this kind of health benefit?
Oh, yeah. They're everywhere. My friend Angie Palmer, you know, she met me. We met in 2009 at a documentary film called Flow or Thirst, one of those. It was about water. And, you know, she had some health issues with cancer. And it was a female, like I think it was either cervical or uterine type cancer. And she had three different doctors telling her to get a complete hysterectomy, and she was not willing to do that. And she was still early stage. And so I talked to her about the whole vegan thing and referred her to the Wellness Forum, which is a local organization here in Columbus. They were also consulted in that film, Forks Over Knives, that I mentioned. And she went through their program and adapted to a whole food plant-based diet and eliminated, you know, the offenders and took on a few other practices that involve certain nutritional things that are not conventional, like eating green tea and consuming flaxseed and eating brewers, a few other, you know, nutritional awarenesses that she completely reversed her cancer. And, I mean, I know so many of these stories. There's so many people that
So are you saying that becoming a vegan can actually reverse cancer?
Yes, and it has. There's a fabulous film out there called The Beautiful Truth, and it talks about Gerson therapy. And there's several people I've talked to about who've gone through a Gerson therapy treatment, and that's a significant nutrition influx that, you know, most people are walking around completely depleted and nutrient deficient. I mean, the average vegan might be deficient in 3 to 6 nutrients or vitamins and minerals, where the average American eating a standard, you know, American diet is deficient in a good 9 to 12 nutrients. So, you know, we are over calorically dense, eating calorically dense foods that are nutritionally deficient. And a lot of it is these conventional farming practices. Once again, you kind of start looking down at the root cause of this, industrialized monocropping. You know, our soils are dramatically depleted. We look at things like, you know, we live here in the goiter belt, okay? The whole northern part of the nation is considered the goiter belt because we don't have iodine in the soils. We're not on the coast, right? So, you know, a lot of people do not know that they're severely deficient in iodine, and iodizing processed salt is not necessarily the answer to solving that problem. So there's a lot of thyroid issues in this state or in this country, And so, you know, people, if they are not really taking an active role in guarding their nutrition, they're failing, regardless of whether they're eating meat. And, you know, the animal products displace much more important foods in your nutritional powerhouse. So, you know, and America's meat supply has 500 to 600 chemicals not listed on the label, and they've known this since 1997. So, you know, the same goes for the dairy products and the animal. Any animal products you're eating, you're getting a boatload of things you had no idea you were eating.
Well, so what is it? How do you balance a vegan diet? We're down to the last few minutes here, five actually. Araya Flynn talking to us about veganism. What do you balance? How do you balance your diet? It's not enough to just say you are a vegan. What do you make sure you eat when you're in your vegan diet to give you a complete nutritional balance?
Okay. Well, yeah, there's a lot of things that go into this. It's not just what you eat. It's also what you avoid. It's also what you make sure that you do. Like, you need to make sure you're getting adequate vitamin D. This helps with the absorption and the bioavailability of other nutrients in your body. So, you know, people who are not getting enough D in sun and sun exposure, with unprotected sun exposure, you know, need to make sure that they're supplementing vitamin D. They need to make sure they're eating a whole foods, diverse plant-based diet. So we're talking about getting away from a lot of processed foods. Sure, you can eat some processed foods. Just don't make it the mainstay of your meal. Eat a wide variety of everything on the spectrum. So when I say spectrum, I'm meaning like color spectrum. So a lot of vegetables.
What do you mean by that? Blue foods?
Exactly. Think about the rainbow. So, you know, just eat a lot of variety of colors of foods. You definitely need some fats. So you need, you know, and it depends on what kind of conditions people have. I mean, this is a very complicated conversation that really should be had with an expert in nutrition. What I say here, you know, is not for everybody across the board. Everybody is their own person. They have their own allergies, their own conditions, their own, you know, they may be missing body parts. There's all kinds of things that unfortunately people have gone through, either through, you know, being a birth defect or some kind of genetic problem or some kind of self, you know, maybe they were in an auto accident and are missing something. You know, there's very specific regimens for every kind of person out there. Everyone can thrive on a whole foods plant-based diet, but it has to be customized for them and their needs. You know, and that is where a huge portion of what is wrong with our culture is that, you know, people try to fit everybody into a specific category. Like, there's all kinds of mythology going on out there. And I mean, there are things that sound very scientific and like that would be right. And they do have positive impacts for people who adopt them. You know, you've got the eat right for your type blood type diet. You've got the paleo diet, you know, and all of these diets can absolutely show some positive changes for people if they make those adjustments. However, everyone can thrive as a vegan on a whole food.
Well, tell me, how many, Araya Flynn, we're really just about out of time. Give us two books and two websites to look at for a good, solid vegan balanced diet.
Well, I would say the Food Revolution by John Robbins. And
he was from the Baskin-Robbins ice cream fortune, is that right?
Correct. And I would also absolutely say Whole by T. Colin Campbell.
What's it called?
Whole.
Spell that.
W-H-O-L-E.
That's the name of the book, is Whole by T.
Yep.
Colin Campbell? Okay,
yes.
And
how about a
website?
Website, just go to veganshift.org.
Vegan what?
Vegan Shift, S-H-I-F-T.
IFT, veganshift.org. Is that your website?
Correct.
All right. Well, Araya Flynn, it's been a joy to talk with you. Our listenership has been strong through the hour here. And we'll try and put up your picture to go with this radio show on the website so people can see how healthy you look. And I'm afraid I'm still struggling with fish, but I really have no, after 45 years, I really have no cravings for meat. And every once in a while,
thing.
I can say pizza looks really good, but I know what it'll do to me. So
I got to tell you the secret to fish, okay? If you want your omegas, You need seeds. Seeds are a huge thing. This is a major important thing to thriving as a vegan. You need chia seeds. You need hemp seeds. You need fresh ground flax seeds you grind at the moment of truth, not flax oil, not whole flax seed. You will not digest them unless you want to use them as roughage to help you pass.
All right. With that pleasant conversation, we'll go over to the seed world. Orion Flynn, thank you so much. You've been a great guest as always. This has been the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We are going vegan with cows with guns and Orion Flynn. Stay tuned next week for more talk from Solartopia.
Harvey, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Or anytime.